Welcome to the Best of Women's Fiction podcast. I'm Lainey Cameron, and I'm so thrilled you're here. I'm an author of women's fiction, a digital nomad, and a book marketing expert. Find out more about how I can help you with that at laineycameron.com. I'm also the author of The Exit Strategy, fun feminist fiction, and a 14-time book award winner. I created this podcast to showcase authors and books I admire. If you enjoy it, I'd love if you subscribed, and even better, give it some stars or a quick review. Now let's get to this week's special guest. This episode is with Joni Elliott, who won the prestigious Star Award last year from WFWA, Women's Fiction Writers Association, for her debut novel, The Audacity of Sarah Grayson. I will tell you that this is a must listen if you have creative urges. Perhaps you've thought maybe you'd like to be creative, but you're not the person in the family. Joni has fabulous ideas and thoughts for you. With that, let's hear from her. I'm excited that we get to catch up with you, Joni.
Thank you, Lainey. I'm delighted to be on your podcast.
So where are you joining us from today?
I am here in Provo, Utah, just south of Salt Lake City. I've got a nice view of the mountains, and this is where I'm from originally, well, from just outside of Salt Lake.
I'm excited to talk about this book, especially because several authors that I admire and that I've selected for the podcast in the past have been raving about your novel. So not only did it win the Star Award, but I know Maddie Dawson has been raving about it, and Anne Garvin, who writes the funniest, fabulous books. And here's what Anne had to say. She said, "You know what it's like when you discover a new writer whose witty and wise voice makes your heart sing? That's Joni Elliott for me. I stayed up too late turning pages. Loved it." Well, what a thing when someone like Anne Garvin, who writes fabulous, funny books, thinks your book is fabulous and you're the biggest new voice out there.
I was so thrilled to get that from her. I love Anne Garvin. And so many others were just so kind and generous and supportive, like Maddie Dawson, too.
They totally are. So let's talk about this fabulous book, The Audacity of Sarah Grayson. Why don't you tell folks who haven't had a chance to read it yet a little bit about what's it about?
Well, the book centers around two questions, and it's about what happens when the world's greatest literary icon dies before she finishes the final book in her best-selling series. And what happens when she leaves that book in the hands of her unstable, neurotic daughter who swears she is not a real writer. And that person is Sarah Grayson. And there's the nice photograph of her right there. So this is pretty much, and patterned after me, I think. And anyway, 3 weeks after the death of her mother, this iconic best-selling author, she finds out that it's her mother's dying wish that she finished the last book in her mother's series. And Sarah is horrified. She thinks this is the worst thing her mother could possibly do to her because Sarah's life is not going well. Years ago, she'd had a dream of becoming a novelist, but that was long ago. She doesn't think she can even write now. I mean, she tries to write greeting cards and things like that. But for her mother, has always believed in her. And this is really her last chance. Sarah's horrified. She at first says, "No, I'm not going to do it. There's no way I can do this." Then after a few crazy things that happen, Sarah agrees to take it on. But stepping into her mother's shoes means stumbling into some family secrets that she was never meant to know about. And so this journey becomes a journey of self-discovery, her family, and what does she have inside of herself creatively? What can she do? And so this story takes you on that journey with Sarah Grayson. And it's a deep dive into the writing world and the creative world. And I hope my readers will want to take that with her.
And I had a chance to look at some of your book club questions and discussion in addition to looking at the fabulous reviews for this book. And it seems like people really love this topic of creativity and what does it take to be vulnerable and to put yourself out there to take on that creative life. And maybe you don't feel like you're good enough or deserving of it. For me, that's such a fascinating theme. Like, where did the inspiration for putting that at the heart of a novel come from?
You know, in 2015, I was teaching writing at the University of Maryland, and I loved my job. I will never achieve my dream of writing and publishing a novel. And I had a lot of colleagues who were able to do both and did it really well, but I was not one of them. And so I talked things over with my husband. I said, "I think I just need to give myself a couple of years and just focus entirely on writing." And so fall semester 2015, instead of going to class, I came to my computer. I was so full of energy and excitement. But I will tell you, it went from challenging to this is hard, the two agonizing, because everything I started didn't work. I also thought I was a YA author at the time, because that's the only other novel I'd written. And so nothing was working. And, you know, some people procrastinate. Well, I procrastinate organize. And I was organizing my kitchen pantry, my closets, my garage, everything. I was walking the aisles of the Container Store in my yoga pants and no bra. And I'm sure they had me on their security cam thinking, somebody help this woman. I was just miserable. I thought, what have I done? I've left my job and this isn't even working for me. And I remember crying in my bathroom thinking, well, so I thought, well, nobody cares. At least that I've got that going for me. And then I thought, what would it be like if people were waiting for me to write this novel, like hundreds of people? And then I thought, what if there were thousands? Like, how would that feel? And then I thought, what would it be like if there were like millions of people waiting for me to write this novel? And that's the moment that I imagined this sad sort of person with the weight of the writing world on her shoulders. And that's the moment Sarah Grayson was born in my bathroom. And it was an unmedicated birth. And without assistance, there she came to me. And once I had caught a vision of her, things began to change. And I knew very quickly that it was her mother that was the iconic author, that she had left the book to Sarah, and that it was a gift to her. It was a gift because her mother believed in her.
So what happened once you had this character? And, you know, you'd invented her in the bathroom. She'd been born. She's going to have to write the equivalent of the next Jodi Picoult novel, except Jodi Picoult, unfortunately, in this scenario, is no longer around. So what then? Where'd you go with it?
Right. So after I had Sarah Grayson, things started to improve there. I realized that the Container Store is not a good place to write a novel. And I had to really learn to protect my time and to treat it like a regular job and show up at the same time each morning and really... I took a deep dive with Sarah Grayson back into the craft of being a novelist. It had been years since I'd written my first novel. And so I had a lot to learn again. It was actually a really wonderful journey with Sarah. Each chapter has an epigraph and a quote from a famous writer. And I collected all of those. In many ways, though Sarah and I are different from each other, I was taking that deep dive into the writing world with her. And I loved that process.
And one of my favorite questions to ask, it kind of goes straight from what you just said, is what do you advise other writers? I mean, you've got this debut novel that has won several awards, not just the WFWA Star Award, but I saw there were some others as well on your website. And that's amazing for a debut. Like, what advice do you give to people who are facing this kind of, gosh, this huge hill, this vulnerability challenge, all these creativity issues? You know, it's easy to look at the wins, like your success, and say, well, it was easy for you, but I love that you're sharing that it was anything but easy for you. What advice do you give to other writers who are going through those same struggles?
Well, number one, I tell writers, protect your time. I think it's easy, especially as women, to give our time away, our creative time. I think it's easy for people outside of our world, our creative world, to dismiss it, to say, oh, are you just, I'm sure I can call Joni to do something because she's just doing that writing thing, you know? And sometimes we are willing to give it away. I think we really need to honor what the work is, that it is just as valuable as any other work that is being done in the world today, to protect it, give ourselves a space to write it in, the time, the respect that it deserves, and let our families know to honor that as well. I think that's really big for us as women. We still do so much unpaid labor in this world. And so I think when we are doing a creative work, it's really easy, no matter what the creative work might be besides writing, it's just really easy for us to not honor it. And when we're not honoring it, the people around us don't honor it either. So we, number one, have got to honor that.
I love what you're saying. Camille Pagan, who's also been a guest on the podcast, she's also the guiding scribe for women's fiction writers this year.
Yeah.
She posted just a few months back a photo that was like a snow day, so her whole family was home. And she posted a photo on her Instagram account of the big do not disturb, mom is writing, this is her writing time sign on her office door. And so she's a great proponent for this. Like, you have your time for writing, you have those hours set aside, and you need to train everyone around you that those are important. Do not disturb mom, no matter what. Unless the house is on fire, mom does not get disturbed.
Absolutely. Yeah. Well said.
So editing, it sounds like editing was a fun one for you on this book. Did it change a lot from where you started? And is there anything that readers today, I know you've got a lot of book clubs who love reading this book, that they might be surprised to know is maybe different from the original versions?
Well, I will tell you, this book got really huge. It was like 200 more pages that I had to cut. And so it definitely, the revision process was extensive and was too long to begin with, and serious revisions. I had a writing group that they were amazing. I called them my midwives because they took my book twice, the whole thing, and helped me revise that extensively. So they were incredible. And I think in terms of revision, the ending was the hardest for me to get. I usually write a 40, 50 page outline of the book where I'm just going scene by scene. This is the story. I'm just writing it out. And I workshop that with friends and other writers so that I can ask, is this working? You know, what isn't working? So I can see the arc of the story as a whole. But once I start getting into the actual writing of it, there's inevitably things that change. For me in this book, the ending was just always shifting just a little bit. I mean, I knew the basic things of what happened at the end, but there were just intricate little relationships and things that I just, it was just hard to get right. So yeah.
And has there been anything in reader reactions? I know you've been doing book clubs and you've won these awards. Is there anything in that journey that has either surprised or delighted you?
Yes. And the number one thing that has delighted me in terms of response is the response from writers or closet writers. They've reached out to me and they've said, did you intend for this to be a book to help writers write? Or I've learned so much from your book. One person said it was a man who was in his 70s. And he said, I've learned so much about writing. And now I'm going to try and share my writing. And so I love hearing that the book helped people be brave about their writing. And that excites me to no end. And I love hearing that it just inspired people to be creative. And then beyond that, I've heard people say, just last night, I was with a book club. I love being with book clubs. Somebody said to me, it just helped me remember that I can do hard things. And that just thrills me. But the big surprise to me has been the number of people that said, I think every writer should read this. And so I'm actually going to start pitching it to some creative writing classrooms, because I think from what the response that I'm getting, I think it would be a great book for creative writers to read just as a springboard for discussion, undergrad, if they started with the book and used it as a springboard for discussion as they move into the writing, because it just covers so many of the issues that we deal with as writers in terms of the self-doubt and the process and the revision and how do we emotionally connect with our characters. There's all these things that Sarah has to learn. And I will tell you, I wasn't writing this book thinking, and now I'm going to write a good chapter about self-doubt, and now will be a good chapter about revision. It wasn't anything like that. Sarah's just experiencing all of it. Everybody has different experiences with writing, but I'm getting email after email where somebody is saying, I'm writing a coming of age story, and your book just helped me with this section. So I'm excited about that. And that's my next big promotion, is I'm going to start pitching it. And my publisher has agreed to donate a classroom set to some high schools. And so we'll take it from there.
That's fun. That's really fun. Imagining like high school students studying your work. That must be like a really... Do you think you'll get a maybe a chance to interact with any of those high school students?
I sure hope so. I would love to. I began my career in secondary ed, so I would love to be back in some younger classrooms. And right now I'm visiting some undergrad classrooms. There are two universities within 10 minutes of me. So yeah, that's exciting
to
me.
Sounds so fun. So what do you like to read? Like when you get a chance to read, do you read in genre, out of genre? What do you like? And is there anything our listeners or our watchers here might want to know about that you would recommend?
You know, I adore women's fiction and just contemporary fiction. So, but I read widely still. When I'm in the mode of writing, though, I do love to read authors like Anne Garvin and Leanne Moriarty and Jojo Moyes, those who are just have such a great voice that appeals to me so strongly. I just finished a book, though, called The Maid by Nita Prose. And I don't know if anybody has heard of this book, but it is told from the perspective of somebody who's on the autism scale, so neurodivergent. And she just has the most fabulous first person narrative, and it's all told from her perspective, which just is so wonderful. It's a book with a big mystery right at the center of it, and it just grabs hold of you and doesn't let go. So it's terrific. And I'm reading a book called Wintering again, because I'm in Utah and we have very cold, snowy winters. And it's Wintering by Catherine May. And it just reminds me of the beauty of winter and how we need winter in a much better place. So I'm not crying in a ball right now, Lainey. I'm dressed.
It's hard. It's hard. As someone who grew up in Scotland, where we have whole months where you don't really see sun, like, I love Scotland, it's beautiful, go visit it. But there are certain months of the year where it is dark, right? Like, you don't get a lot of sky visibility, and it's not good for your mental health. It's really hard to live through that.
That does sound hard.
Not unrelated, but now I'm in Mexico, so.
Are you happier then?
It's funny. I have a friend who writes, she's actually writing her memoir, which is going to be fabulous when it comes out. And one of the things she's covering in her memoir is how her mental health improved after she left the States and moved to a place where it was a different environment. And yeah, where we live, and not just weather, but climate and the way people interact with each other completely can affect your outlook on the world, the planet, your relationships, everything. It's amazing how much it can affect you.
Oh, I totally believe that. And if we're going to write, we totally need to be in a good headspace, right?
Right, exactly. And I'll put the link to that friend's blog if anyone's interested. She's called Rhea Talkin. She's writing some phenomenal memoir stuff. It's coming out soon. Well, before we wrap up, and I want to ask where people can connect with you, is there anything I haven't asked you that you like to talk about or you want to share with readers? Or,
you know, I have come to believe that there is a yearning to create in every one of us. And it's easy sometimes to think, oh, so-and-so is the creative one in the family and I'm not. Or, you know, we just kind of decide sometimes that we're not that creative. And I read a quote that I love from Mary Oliver. She said, "The most regretful people on earth are those who felt the call to creative work, who felt their own creative power restive and uprising, and gave to it neither power nor time." That when we answer those creative calls, we live a more full, beautiful life. And one of the things that Sarah Grayson has to learn is how to answer that call. And it takes being vulnerable. It takes courage. It takes feeling alone sometimes and feeling afraid. But when we are willing to lean into that vulnerability, that's when we can start to feel most alive. And you'll find in the Women's Fiction Writing Association, WFWA, that organization just surrounds you with people who are vulnerable too, and who are trying to do really good work. We may write alone, but we do not have to be alone in this journey. So to anyone listening to this, take courage, be brave, write those words, and find connection with others who can share this journey with you, because you don't have to do this alone.
I love that. And you know, you made me remember that just next month, we're going to do a special episode for Women's Fiction Day, the genre that is women's fiction. Yes. And I'm going to be doing it, talking with several members of Women's Fiction Writers Association about that genre and what it's like to write women's fiction and some of the challenges. And why is there even a genre that has a genderized description these days? And so we're actually going to do an episode on the podcast where we specifically talk about all of those things coming up here in June. Well, it has been a joy to talk with you. I love everything you were saying around creativity, and I feel like I just learned a ton, and I want to go put that Mary Oliver quote on my wall now because I think I need it. Where can people catch up with you? I know your website has fabulous resources. I was looking at some of the fun stuff you have there for book clubs. Is that where people should start if they want to learn more and catch up with you?
I would love for people to visit my website at joanieelliott.com. And I have really great book club resources, even a book club kit. And I love to visit book clubs that are local and pop in via Zoom to other book clubs. I'm on Instagram a lot. I'm on all the social media sites, but I'm on Instagram the most.
Perfect. We'll put the link to your website and the Instagram on the show notes on bestofwomensfiction.com. And you can find the video version there if you're listening to the audio, and all the links to the books that were recommended. And I just want to say thank you so much for joining me today.
Thank you, Lainey. This has just been wonderful. I appreciate this.
For links to the books featured in this episode, the video version, the author's social media, and more, visit bestofwomensfiction.com. I'd love it if you'd follow me, Lainey Cameron, on Instagram or TikTok. And if you enjoy the podcast, we really appreciate reviews and shares.